Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Inside. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It's being called a triple threat. Along with the ongoing cases of COVID and seasonal flu, the CDC is seeing an increase in ER visits and hospitalizations across the country due to a common respiratory illness called RSV. The virus usually causes mild, cold-like symptoms, but can be more serious in young children and older adults. Pediatric hospitals across the country are reporting unusually high RSV case numbers, and some are overwhelmed with the number of patients they're receiving. Today, we're going to get a better understanding of what RSV is and why parts of the country are seeing so many cases this early in the season, as well as what families should know as we head into the holidays. Joining us today are two pediatric hospitalists from our region whose communities have seen an uptick in RSV cases in recent weeks. Dr. Nicole Webb is with Valley Children's Health in Merced County, and Dr. Bronwyn Carlson is with Renowned Children's Hospital in Reno. Dr. Webb and Carlson, welcome to Insight. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Well, let's head down to the Central Valley in Merced County. Dr. Webb, for our listeners who may not know, I mean, I had to look up what RSV was when I first was seeing headlines of it. What exactly is RSV?
Yeah, that's a great question. And then just as a quick clarification, I actually am in Madera County, although we cover the entire San Joaquin Valley at our institution. So RSV stands for respiratory syncytial virus, which is a mouthful, and that's why we call it RSV. It is a very, very common respiratory virus that causes a predictable pattern of symptoms and typically circulates in a seasonal fashion. So to an older child or an adult, it's just a cold and you would never know that you had it because you wouldn't necessarily be ill enough to come to medical attention and get a test for it. In infants and children, typically under the age of 2, it causes a phenomenon known as bronchiolitis, which is really inflammation of the small airways in the lungs. And that is really driven by a lot of mucus that builds up and can cause difficulty breathing. So to a parent, what that looks like is a child who starts off with a cold and some congestion, is really snotty, might have some fever. And then in a majority of cases, that's all it is. But in our younger children in particular, it often progresses to really trouble breathing. That is often why they end up seeking medical attention, particularly at an emergency department or in a hospital such as where Dr. Bronwyn and I work.
Yeah. Dr. Carlson in Reno, what are you seeing in terms of cases with RSV in your community, and how is it impacting the acute care department at your hospital, Renown?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, we are just starting to see an uptick in our RSV cases. We know that the general predictable trend is that it starts out in the East Coast and hits there first, usually because they get the colder weather, and usually RSV is typically seen during the cold weather season. And so it, you know, usually starts on the East Coast and then moves its way across the country and out west. So we have not hit a complete surge the way that the East Coast has been seeing over the past several weeks, but our numbers are definitely ticking up. You know, we know that for the state of Nevada, our case positivity has gone from less than 1% to about 8% over the past several weeks. And, you know, our hospital is then being impacted by that. You know, we have about half of our pediatric patients in the general pediatrics unit are positive for RSV right now. And in our PICU, it's actually about 3/4 of them. So we definitely are seeing more and more RSV, but we have not gotten the volume, that kind of wave of volume that the East Coast has seen so far.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I was going to go to you and see if you were seeing the same trend, Dr. Webb, in the Central Valley, because your hospital told us the positivity rate was around 10% earlier in October, but it went up to like 19% about 2 weeks ago. Where does that stand now?
Yeah, I apologize for being overly eager there. Yes. So we went from about 10% 2 weeks ago to 23% last week, actually. Very similar to Dr. Carlson. I actually am on clinical service right now. So I just left several RSV patients to come talk to you. So we have really seen a huge uptick in our region. Our kind of proportion of our patients who are hospitalized is pretty comparable to what Dr. Carlson described, but it is much earlier than in previous pre-COVID years, and it's definitely accounting for a majority of the patients presenting ill to our emergency department and being hospitalized. Mm-hmm. And as a contrast to that, we're seeing very few patients hospitalized with COVID-19 at this point, and those who are typically coming in for other reasons and are incidentally being found to be positive.
Why do you think, given that RSV is common, it's typically mild in seasons, mm-hmm. especially before the pandemic, why do you think there's an alarming rise in pediatric cases? Why is it happening now, Dr. Webb?
That's a great question. And I will qualify this by saying I'm not an epidemiologist, but at least in terms of what we're seeing here, it's not a different beast than in previous years. All of us in pediatrics, whether you do outpatient or inpatient medicine, are very, very, very used to RSV. And we set our calendars by it every winter. What's really different is that this surge is just happening sooner. In previous years, as Dr. Carlson mentioned, it's typically a little later. Usually we start to see an uptick more like November, and then it really starts to peak in December and January. So we're seeing that about 6 to 8 weeks earlier than usual, at least in my region. And the why of that is kind of puzzling, I think, to a lot of people. We honestly anticipated that we would see this return to what we used to think of as normal last year. And many hospitals, including my own, were surge planning and trying to come up with staffing models to account for what we expected, which was a return to our pre-COVID numbers. And it just really didn't happen. And we saw this kind of low level that actually petered out early in the winter, and then we were seeing some cases even into the spring. So I think the biggest thing that we have seen since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic is really a disruption in the predictable patterns of our seasonal respiratory viruses. So far, it feels like we are returning to what things used to be like, and it's just happening sooner. But as far as severity, we haven't really, at least in our region, noticed greater severity. It's just, there's more cases, they're earlier. And then we have an entire generation of COVID infants and new parents who have not experienced this before, have maybe never heard of this virus. And there are a lot of news stories covering this surge, and we've had a lot of parents coming in concerned that they need a test just to know, or that the virus itself is inherently more dangerous than it actually is. I will say that RSV accounts for a disproportionate amount of disease burden in children. And long before COVID-19 was something any of us had ever heard of, it's what keeps hospitals, children's hospitals and community hospitals full in the wintertime. So it's not different. It's just earlier.
Yeah. Dr. Carlson, I see you nodding. I was reading a New York Times article where doctors across the country, some of them suspect that those who would have ordinarily been exposed to RSV over the last couple of years, and Dr. Webb touched upon this, were insulated. We were social distancing during the pandemic, and this may be one cause that's driving up the numbers. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes. No, I mean, I would echo Dr. Webb's sentiment that I am, again, not an epidemiologist, but I would agree that, we do kind of have this generation of young children who have not experienced normal respiratory seasons. So we think about, 2 years of masking, 2 years of minimal school or masking at school. And this is really the first fall and winter that we're seeing children at school without masks. We're not having quite the strict rules about staying home if you're sick. So a lot more kids are going to school with kind of these mild illnesses. And while, like Dr. Webb was saying, it may not impact our older children the same way, they then come home and they have younger siblings who are, in that high risk age range. And so we have this whole cohort of infants who really just haven't had any respiratory viruses that they've been exposed to. And one of the other things is that we know our mothers who are breastfeeding, they generally can pass antibodies through breast milk. And, the mothers have also been masking and kind of staying indoors for the past 2 years. So they don't necessarily have the antibodies to pass on to their infants as well. So I think it's a little bit of a perfect storm. We have more children out there. We have more kids in school. We have infants who haven't been exposed. We have moms who haven't been exposed. And a little bit of the pandemic fatigue that we've seen. So people are wanting to get out. They're wanting to go do all the things that they enjoyed doing pre-pandemic.
And I know that your increase in RSV cases were in the single digit percentile. I think you said 8 to 9% in Reno. I'm curious, with because the CDC is also concerned about, you know, a triple threat of in addition to flu and COVID, what does influenza and COVID look like in Reno right now, Dr. Carlson?
So we're just starting to see a small uptick in influenza again. Influenza is typically a little bit of a later winter virus. So we're just starting to see our first influenza in the past few weeks. We have not had a heavy disease burden. What's interesting is we're actually seeing kids who come in with RSV and flu. Mm-hmm. So again, what that mm-hmm. CDC is talking about, that, you know, triple-demic that we may be seeing. And we know that viruses can be additive. And so if you have RSV and you have flu, you may end up with more symptomatology and, you know, more trouble breathing for these small infants than if you just had one or the other.
Mm. How can a parent or an adult tell the difference, you know, between flu, COVID, and RSV, if their child is symptomatic and is just sick?
So I don't know that there is really any way to tell the difference. You know, I think even as physicians, until we do that, the swab in the nose and find out, you know, it's really hard to differentiate. They often present with those same symptoms of, you know, some congestion, some runny nose, then a little bit of fever, then they get into coughing. So I think, again, just really treating the symptomatology. That's really what we do for RSV and bronchiolitis in general is provide supportive care. So watching our hydration, making sure our babies, you know, are drinking enough, eating enough, making enough wet diapers, making sure that they're not having trouble breathing. So looking for those sucking in of the ribs, sucking in of the stomach, you know, kind of bobbing of the head. Those are all signs that young infants or children are having difficulty breathing. So we really watch out for those signs more than anything else.
Dr. Webb, given that you've seen more than a 20% increase in your area in the Central Valley, I know that you said that it's not, these cases of RSV aren't more severe, but they are higher and there's an uptick. Mm-hmm. It's earlier in the season. Ultimately, what does that mean for your staff taking in more patients earlier in the year?
That is the million-dollar question, or probably more than million-dollar question. And I would say the biggest thing, just to kind of to answer that and echoing what Dr. Carlson just said, is the treatment for all three of those viruses really is actually supportive care. There is an FDA-approved treatment for influenza. It's not especially efficacious, and it's really only recommended in severe cases. So getting to the staffing piece, as Dr. Carlson said, if your child is hydrating okay, is congested and coughing, but not having difficulty breathing and is able to keep liquids down, then really it's kind of staying at home, both for reducing their exposure to other germs, you know, if they're coming to an emergency department setting or an urgent care setting, and also reducing exposing others to their germs, because we really need to kind of reserve those resources in our emergency department settings in particular for the more severely ill children. Because when we start to see these viruses kind of piling up at the same time, we know how to treat them, but we do get to a point where we are short on beds, on you know, the equipment required if they need respiratory support and things like that. So we do get very anxious even before COVID-19 when we start to see things peaking earlier, or when we start to see the overlapping cases of influenza and RSV, some of the other viruses that are out there, because we know that you know, the bed capacity and the staffing are a limited resource. So we never want to dissuade parents from seeking care if they're concerned. But I think a really important message is there's not a need to do a test just to know the result of the test. It should really be guided by how ill appearing the child is, and the primary care provider. You know, we are both hospitalists. Those offices are very strapped right now as well. But a phone call to the primary care provider to kind of describe symptoms and figure out if they really need to be assessed urgently is a really underutilized a tool.
Can RSV lead to other illnesses that people should be aware of, Dr. Webb?
Yeah, so most obvious thing is it can progress to pretty severe difficulty breathing, and for, you know, the majority of children don't need to be hospitalized. Among those who do, most of them are able to be managed with some straightforward modalities like oxygen and maybe some IV fluids. Some of those will require more invasive help, things like breathing tubes having to be connected to a ventilator. It is possible for it to sort of set you up to develop a secondary infection like pneumonia. However, RSV is probably the best studied illness in pediatrics. There are thousands of people that have made their entire careers out of trying to understand this. And the biggest thing that we know is we're all very desperate to find something that will make it better. And that leads to a lot of treating of things that ultimately aren't really helpful to the child. So it's pretty rare that it turns into something else. But we will end up trying a lot of other treatments if the child's getting sicker, because it's very hard for families and for pediatricians. We all want to help our patients to be dealing with an illness that ultimately really you're hydrating and you're providing oxygen and suctioning mucus. And those are really the only evidence-based therapies for it.
Yeah, Dr. Carlson, it may be difficult for a parent to know when to stop treating symptoms at home and actually take a child to the hospital. When do you believe a parent should bring their child to either their primary care doctor, urgent care, or even an emergency room for possible RSV, which can also be flu or COVID, since there's really no way of separating between the two at home?
Yeah, I think that's a really important discussion that we have with parents all the time of, you know, when do we want you to seek care? So I think, again, paying attention to the hydration status. So we want to make sure that even if they're not eating as much, we want them to be drinking. Mm-hmm. Best way to tell in infants is by measuring their wet diapers. Mm-hmm. So we want at least three or four wet diapers in any 24-hour period. Less than that, we do start to worry that they're getting dehydrated. So that's kind of the one aspect that we see with bronchiolitis, just because kids get so congested that they have difficulty breathing and eating and drinking. The other real big thing to look at is kind of how hard they're working to breathe. You know, we look for things like flaring of the nostrils. We look for things like kind of sucking in above the collarbones, in between the ribs, under the ribs. If you are looking at your child and you can see from across this room, you watch them and you can see that they're breathing, that's telling us that they are working harder to breathe. And if you notice that your child is working harder to breathe, or if they're breathing very rapidly, they're not staying hydrated, those would all be reasons to seek care. I think that if there's any questions, just like Dr. Webb said, you know, reaching out to the pediatrician or your primary care doctor via the phone, they can really help triage whether or not you need to be seen. And then I think the only other thing, you know, that we always look for is any kind of color change. Color change is a little bit of a later sign. So that is something that is really an emergency room or calling 911 if there's color change, either blue, gray, purple. But, you know, really looking for those signs of respiratory distress and then watching the hydration status.
Finally, before I let you both go, you were talking about planning for a surge last season, and then now we're getting an earlier uptick in RSV cases this year. Are you anticipating, or I guess what conversations are you having with your staff preparing for potentially, you know, that kind of surge scenario that you were planning for last year for this year? Dr. Carlson?
Yeah, so I think it's always good to plan in advance, as we've learned with COVID and the pediatric world. We planned and really tried to help out our adult colleagues. So I think some of that same planning for the COVID surge really can be used in our planning for our bronchiolitis or RSV surge. So ensuring that we have, you know, a fully staffed physicians and mid-level providers has been really important. Our nursing administration is working really hard to ensure that we have adequate nursing staff. And then really we're looking at potential for other spaces that we may need to open up to have extra beds, and ensuring that our emergency room is fully staffed as well, because that's another real big kind of crunch point for our respiratory season.
Yeah. Dr. Webb?
Yeah, I agree with everything Dr. Carlson said. I think that the COVID-19 pandemic has taught us a lot about planning and how to be nimble and really sort of creative with the resources that we have. And so I would echo what she said as far as that is concerned. I do think it's important, though, to acknowledge that healthcare is experiencing a staffing shortage unlike anything that really has been seen in modern history. And that is largely driven by sort of, for lack of a better term, burnout and a lot of factors mm-hmm. throughout the pandemic. So we do, we're starting with a pool that is a lot smaller than it was 3 years ago. And then we've, you know, have things like supply chain shortages and delays to contend with. So I'm in that sense, I'm very grateful for all the lessons that we have learned about really how to be creative. And we will definitely, I think, be leveraging a lot of those. But to echo the point about the emergency department, we know in this country that a disproportionate percentage of folks will seek care in that type of a setting and could potentially be managed elsewhere. And there's so many reasons for that beyond the scope of what we're talking about today. But that really getting back to kind of, you don't need to come in just to get a test or just because the child has a fever, but the reasons Dr. Carlson mentioned, you know, are really, really critical. So surge planning is definitely underway, and we're identifying all the opportunities we can to leverage additional nursing resources in particular, which is more of a challenge than physician staffing, at least in our area. But we are, a little anxious because we've seen a lot of folks leave the healthcare field in the last few years.
Dr. Webb and Dr. Carlson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Dr. Nicole Webb is with Valley Children's Health in Madera County, and Dr. Bronwyn Carlson is with Renowned Children's Hospital in Reno. You're listening to Insight here on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.